to the program. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to have you with us. I am joined today with a very special guest, Jochen Werfel. He is the young age of 92 and has an amazing story of endurance, being successful, of coming from unimaginable hardship. And I want to hear what he has to say on life, love, patriotism. And I'm doing this because of the one-year anniversary of October 7th, when Hamas terrorists brutally murdered so many Jews. This is a man who understands this, and his story is one that is extraordinarily compelling. With your permission, I'm going to suspend our normal program for family caregivers and spend some time with this story and spend some time with Mr. Werfel. I think you're going to find it very meaningful. So, Mr. Werfel, I am really honored that you would be here today. You survived the Holocaust, and you came here at, what, age 17? Is that right?
I was 17, yes.
Tell us your story. What happened, and then what has happened since, and then what are your thoughts? Because as we're leading up to the one-year anniversary of October 7th, I know you have some very serious thoughts on this, and so I want to delve into all of that as best as possible. But give us a little bit of your background and your family's background.
Peter, I was born June 15 in 1932, and I was born at my grandmother's house in Germany. Although my family, my father, mother, my brother, and I, we lived in Austria. My father worked in Vienna. He worked for the president of Austria, Mr. Schuschnigg. You know, we had a wonderful life for a few years in Austria when I was very little. Then came the news that Hitler was coming into Austria and taking Austria over, making it part of Germany. So my father and my mother were very, very worried about us. I should tell you that my mother was Jewish. My father was Catholic. When they got married, he was taken out of the Catholic Church. He was asked to leave the church. When, before Hitler came into Austria, which was a terrible time, my father decided that we should be safer in Berlin, where my grandparents lived at that time. Now, it's strange to think that you would be safer there, but at the time, Berlin was safer than a place where Hitler was walking in with his troops and so on, and SS and Gestapo. So Peter and I, my brother and I, were sent to Berlin to live with my grandparents. My mother went into exile in Czechoslovakia in Prague, because at that time Prague was pretty safe. And she went there, and my father cook at that time still continued working for the government. And when Hitler came into Austria, my father and Mr. Schuschnigg, the president of Austria, both of them were immediately taken to a train and put into a concentration camp called Sachsenhausen, which is right north of Berlin, just a couple of miles north of Berlin. And my father was there for quite a while. My father was now a political prisoner. And Peter and I lived with our grandparents for a year or two in Berlin. And we had a wonderful time with my grandparents. My grandfather took us to the zoo every Sunday and bought us ice cream. And we went for long walks with him. And it was a very, very nice life with my grandparents.
Were you allowed to, in any way, have any communication with your father?
No. We had no conversation, no, nothing at all with my father. He was in Sachsenhausen in the concentration camp, and no, we could not talk to him or in any way communicate with him. So then my grandfather, things were getting worse in Berlin too. So my grandfather decided that the boys, my brother and myself, that we should be somewhere safer. Number one, my parents, when they took us to Berlin, they went to baptize both of us in a Catholic church. This was very smart and very good, because now we were Catholic. We were no longer Jewish, because my mother was Jewish, and when your mother is Jewish, you are considered Jewish. So now we were Catholic. And he sent us to a camp where he knew some people, because he had been stationed there, near there, when he was in the army, in the German army, in the First World War. So we went to this camp. This camp was run by a wonderful lady called Irma Franzen Heinrichsdorf, and we called her Tante Irma, Aunt Irma. And she really became like my second mother, because we were only supposed to be there for a few weeks until things would normalize somehow. But, well, I didn't leave there until I was 17 years old. And I was 6 years when I got there. When I was in Berlin, I started school. I started school in Berlin. But during my first school year, we moved to Dangast, which is in northern Germany, right on the North Sea. And Dangast is the name of this little town where Tante Irma had her camp for children. And they would be sent there in the summer to have a good time, because it's right on the North Sea. It was only a block from the beach. It was a beautiful place and a beautiful beach. So we lived there, for quite a while. And then my mother, then Hitler decided to also invade the Czech Republic. Well, with a lot of Jewish people there, and immediately all the Jewish people, of course, were imprisoned, and my mother had to come back or go somewhere else to hide from the Germans in Prague, in the Czech Republic, where she lived for 2 years. And she came back to her parents, who still lived in Berlin at the time. It was very difficult to travel in any way at that time, so she came back somehow on a coal train. How she managed that, I really don't know, but it was a train carrying coal into Germany, and she came back on that train. And she then decided that she wanted to live with her two boys for a little while, so she got an apartment in Berlin, and she called Tante Irma in the summer camp and asked her to send us to Berlin so we could live with her for just a little while. Anyway, so we did, and we lived with our mother. One day my mother gave us a job, and she said, here, take this letter. I want you to deliver that to someone, and this letter you get for the delivery by subway in Berlin. You take the subway from here to another place, and we changed subways, and finally we went to our final subway destination, and we came up the steps, and there was a gentleman who had a code word that was given to us by our mother, and we were to give the letter to him. So all of that worked out, and this gentleman gave a letter to us to take to my mother. So we took the subway back, and as we came out of the subway, which was right around the corner from where we lived, it's a big apartment house where my mother rented an apartment, and all of a sudden we saw in front of the apartment house a number of SS and Gestapo cars.
We're talking with Jack Werfel. The book is called My Two Lives, Holocaust Survivor and Extraordinary Individual. This is Peter Rosenberger. We'll be right back with the rest of this story.
Danny, the baby just rolled over for the first time. Oh, what a strong little boy.
That a boy, son. You're on your way.
Oh, aww, who's my strong little man?
Rollovers can be milestones in life. Some early on, and some later. One rollover you might consider is from your individual retirement account to a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation. If you'd like to increase your retirement income and leave an impactful gift to the work of American Family Association, the charitable gift annuity is a worthwhile option. To learn more, contact the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or email foundation@afa.net. If you own an IRA, would like to increase your charitable giving, but need retirement income, the IRA to CGA rollover may be for you. Call the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You know, it's hard to believe we used to have to go to the library and spend hours looking through card catalogs, encyclopedias, and microfiche archives to find information. And I bet you never thought you'd hear the word microfiche again. The internet has revolutionized how we get information, and AFA Stream is working to do that for our biblical worldview. Are you trying to find a course of study for homeschooling or your small group? Try AFA Stream. Looking for a documentary to encourage you in your faith and help you share it with others? Check out AFA Stream. Want a family-friendly movie to uplift and inspire you and your family? Yep, you guessed it. AFA Stream has it. And if you're interested in learning from the AFA Cultural Institute videos, they're in a section by themselves, easy to find, and ready to watch when it's convenient for you. A lot of the content you'll find is free, but if you're a Great Commission partner, you'll unlock even more. So take time to check it out today at stream.afa.net.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberg. This is a special edition of the program today here on AFR. I wanted to feature my conversation I had with Jack Werfel as we've just commemorated the one-year anniversary of October 7th. I thought it would be appropriate to hear from somebody who had survived the Holocaust. Jack was telling the story of his brother and he delivering a message for his mother. They came back to the building they lived in, and it was surrounded by SS guards.
And we had just no idea why the Gestapo was there or the SS. You know, there were a lot of people living in that building. To our surprise, it was my mother. And they arrested my mother, put her in a Gestapo car, and drove her away. Eventually, after she was brought into a Gestapo jail in Berlin, she was taken to Auschwitz, where she was killed eventually.
You were able to go see your mother. Was that the last time you saw her? Was that the Gestapo prison?
We saw my mother. We found her. We found her cell. We talked to her briefly. She simply said, "Boys, you can't be here. You shouldn't have come here. Because if they catch you here, the same thing is going to happen to you that's happening to me. So I want you to be good. Take care of your schoolwork. Learn a lot, do the best you can in school, and now go home, leave, be safe, America."
So you're just little kids, and this is the last time you saw your mother.
Yes.
She was Jewish. Your father was Catholic. He was a political prisoner. Were you and your brother labeled as Jewish during this time?
Well, we were Catholic. So whenever someone asked us who we were and where our papers were, they would always show Catholic. So that's one of the things that saved us. The other thing is the lady in this summer camp, she also knew who we were because she had known my grandfather during the Second World War when he was stationed there. In that respect, we were safe because of the Catholicism, you know, because of our baptism.
And this was your grandfather that was in the war. This was the Great War, World War One, but he was your father's father.
My mother's father.
Your mother's father. So he was Jewish.
Very Jewish.
And okay. And so he fought in the Great War, and he knew this lady that ran the camp.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Things, of course, got worse and worse in Berlin, and people began to disappear. And all of a sudden, some of our relatives disappeared. And eventually, sadly enough, our grandparents disappeared also. So everybody, all of my relatives, my uncles, my aunts, my nephews, my cousins, everybody disappeared and was taken to a concentration camp, and they were all killed.
Did your father's parents at any point try to reach out to you all to take care of you, or were they involved?
I never met my father's parents. They were Austrian. I have no idea. He had two sisters. Both of them became Catholic nuns.
And but you've never had any dealings with them?
I had no dealings with any of them. I was 6 years old when I went to, first to school and then to the camp. I guess there really was no time. We lived in Germany. We didn't get back to our we lived in Austria at that time, but never met my grandparents on my father's side. I really don't know what happened to them.
So because you were baptized, you were not targeted and you were not practicing your Jewish faith at this point.
No. Well, there were two other things that saved us. Number one is Tante Irma, the lady of the camp where we lived, up on the North Sea, up on the beach. She knew who we were. And several times over the years, the Gestapo, the SS, would come to her house and say, "Who are these children who live here?" And she would tell them, "Well, I got a summer camp and all of that, and these boys over here, I adopted them, they're my boys," and so on. She also had two children of her own, so she took a big chance in hiding us, in keeping us, because if they would have found out that our mother was Jewish, she would have considered been considered the same way, and she would have ended up in a concentration camp because she was saving us, two Jewish boys. So, yeah, those were all extremely difficult times, My brother and I, every so often, we had no relatives left at this point, except Tante Irma, who knew that we were Jewish. Oh, yeah, and the other thing that also helped us tremendously, our teacher in this little village had a school that consisted of two rooms, two classrooms. One was for grade 1 to 4, and the other one was from 5 to 8. And that's where we went to school with all the local village children.
And
And
none of the other children knew that you were Jewish.
no, of course not. No one else knew. However, my teacher, who was an SS individual,
Oh my.
yeah, he was very friendly with Tante Irma and somehow found out that we were Jewish, but didn't say a word about it. Didn't say a word about it.
Now you knew you were Jewish.
Pardon?
You and Peter both knew that you were Jewish.
Well, of course we did.
And so, but that was something you just had to keep tight-lipped about.
Oh my
How
God, yes.
did he find out about it?
The teacher?
The SS teacher.
Through Tante Irma.
And she just blurted it out, or?
Well, they were friends. They knew each other very well. And he was my teacher. So in the morning at 8 o'clock, we would go to school. We would sing German songs, anti-Jewish songs, the danger of the Jews and kill the Jews and all that sort of thing. And we just sang. We had no choice. We had to sing along with all the other children about these terrible songs, And we knew what was going on. Peter and I, it was amazing how much we knew, but we knew what happened with Hitler and what happened with the Nazis and what happened with our family and where they were and that they were killed or being killed. So we knew all that. It was difficult for us at that age, of course.
Oh,
And
I don't even have the words. I mean, the bravery and the presence of mind that you and Peter had to do this, to stand up to that is extraordinary. And you were still less than 15 years old at this time.
yes. Yeah, and here's one other thing. The lady who took care of the camp, Tante Irma, she had, as I mentioned, two of her own children who were in the Hitler Youth. And she said to us, in order to save you, you have to join the Hitler Youth. Because if you don't, people will ask, well, why are these two boys not going to the meetings? Why don't they belong to the Hitler Youth? So we also joined the Hitler Youth.
Oh
Now,
my
my brother and
goodness.
I were part of the Hitler Youth. We were Catholic. Tante Irma knew that we were Jewish. My teacher knew that he was Jewish. He was amazing.
Were you able to finish your schooling there?
I kept going to school, and I was finished when in the eighth year of my school. In Germany at that time, when you finished your eighth year, your eighth grade, you go to work and learn a profession. Unless your parents had some money or someone sent you to a higher school or gymnasium or whatever they called it in Germany at that time. But of course, there was no money. My grandfather, in the meantime, no longer lived. So Tante Irma wasn't getting any money anymore. And she kept us all those years as her own children. She was just a wonderful lady. And I really have to thank her for my life.
Wow, that's and subsequently your whole family's life and your brother's family, and that's an amazing thing that she did. At what point did you realize that? What trade did you go learn?
My trade was working on farms and going out on fishing boats. Remember, during the war, none of the working men were still at home. They were all in the military. All of the jobs, all of the business were run by very old people or by very young people. So I worked every day after school. Either I was assigned to a farm and worked on the farm, or I would go out on a shrimp boat, which was my favorite thing to do. And I did that for a couple of years, 3 years.
Did Peter do that with you?
Peter had to do the same thing.
Okay.
He didn't like the boating, but he had to work on the farm, you know.
And
We had
were you able to be paid wages for that?
no, we were paid nothing. We were just working for the victory of the war. We were in the Hitler Youth. We worked for the Hitler Youth. You know, we worked for the victory, for the German victory. That's what they told us. That's what we were doing.
This
And
must have caused such internal conflict with you.
I often wonder how my brother and I, how we were able to live with all of that because we were so young and we knew everything. We knew what was going on. We knew what happened to our family. We knew what happened to our parents and so on, you know? It was just amazing.
So this went on, you worked, you went to school, and then at what point did you and Peter look at each other and say, we got to leave Germany?
Well, not until after the war. There was no way during the war, you know, during the Holocaust period, to get away from Germany for us. There was no way.
So
You
you,
know,
through the entirety of the war, you were in this set of circumstances where you had to live a double life as a Jew, but having to participate in the craziness and the rabid hatred of the culture.
exactly.
And the war ended. At what point did you, when you left there to go to America, or did you go to America first?
No, when the war was over, there were several years we were still in Germany. There was just no way to get away. You have to remember there were millions of Germans and people from all over the place who would have liked to have gone to America at that point. You know, the war was just a terrible thing, and families were all half killed, half living. It was just a terrible time, you know.
This is Peter Rosenberger. This is my special interview with Jack Werfel. His book is called My Two Lives. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey, moms and dads, are you at your wit's end? Hi, this is Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I'm so grateful for the partnership we have with American Family Radio. We share a common goal to bring hope to hurting families through the life-changing medium of radio. Be sure to listen Saturday afternoons at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Find help and hope for your family with Parenting Today's Teens.
Coming up this weekend, how should Christians respond to a world that devalues children? Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute will tell us what's behind the global decline in birth rates.
People with a lot of money decided that there were too many people in the world and put their money to work to promote that idea privately, but also to influence the actions of governments.
The Stand Radio, Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 8 p.m. Central on AFR.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Alex Newman is one of the smartest guys I know. He's an investigative journalist, author, and podcaster specializing in exposing activities the Biden-Harris administration and other globalists don't want us to comprehend. For example, thanks to Alex's reporting, we have insights into efforts to subvert our constitution with world government, effect redistributions of wealth, and in the name of fighting pandemics and other emergencies, and improving sustainability, impose a host of restrictions on our movement, speech, and lives. In a thought-provoking video posted yesterday on X, Alex Newman provided evidence that the U.S. government has long had access to technologies to manipulate the weather and has actually weaponized them. The question occurs, as such so-called geoengineering made possible this year's electoral October surprise, namely hurricanes that have been devastating particularly politically conservative states and communities. Inquiring minds want to know. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. I am Peter Rosenberger, and this is a special edition of my program to commemorate the year anniversary of October 7th, and it's my interview with Jack Werfel, Holocaust survivor. You can see the whole thing at my Substack page on video, or you can go out to the podcast and hear the whole interview as well.
I remember Peter and I, what we did during the war. Sometimes at night, we would turn on the radio and listen to BBC, British Broadcasting Company, to find out what was really going on in the world. We didn't know. We were just hoping that the Allies, the Americans, and the British, and the French would finally come into Germany and get a fight all of these.
You had to listen. You're finding this out from the BBC, but did you have to listen to the BBC in secret?
Oh, absolutely.
And so you're happy that the Allies are coming, but you can't tell anybody. You can't act like it.
No, we couldn't.
I am just astonished by the presence of mind that you and your brother had to be able to maintain that fortitude.
We wanted to live. This was the only way.
Did.
If we wouldn't have done that, we would have ended up like the rest of my family. So we were the only two who survived the war, who survived all of those times. And I was telling you the story. So we listened on BBC, and yeah, the Allies have landed. Now I tell you a little story, a little out of time. I finally get to America after the war, and I'll get into that a little later again. We get to America. I'm in America for 3 years. I finally get a job there. I finally learn English. And guess what? I get drafted during the Korean War into the American Army. So now I'm in the American Army, ready to go to Korea, and they sent me to Kentucky, where the 1st Infantry, the 1st Airborne Division, the basic training. So I went through all that basic.
I know that base well.
Do you really?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I would imagine serving in the United States Army was a whole lot more pleasant than serving in the Hitler Youth.
I didn't want to particularly go to Korea and fight. And I didn't. They finally discovered from my papers that I speak German, And the American army said to me, rather than going to Korea, we need you in Germany because we need translators over there. We're training the Germans again to have a part of an allied army to defend against the Russians. They're right there.
What point did you let the secret out that you were Jewish?
I really didn't.
Even when you came to America and you were serving?
Well, you know, the American government, the American army really brought my brother and myself to Germany. They paid for it. They took care of us. They found out who my father was and what happened to my family and our mother and so on. And they volunteered to take us to Germany. There was an organization that was financed by the Catholics and the Jewish people, and it was called the United States Committee for Care of European Children. And under that committee, we were invited to come to the United States, and the U.S. government was responsible for us.
Well, if you don't mind me jumping around in time a little bit,
no.
I wanted to ask you some very pointed questions. Your background and your story, and I know that you came here after the Army, you've flown planes, you've been a very successful businessman, and you've built a great life here in America.
Yes.
I got to ask you, Jack, when you see what is going on in our culture, particularly on our college campuses, and the rabid hatred towards Jews, where does your mind go in this moment? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm very, very disappointed. And I came to this country and there was no such thing. To be in America was everybody's dream over in Germany at that time. Everybody would want to come over here. And I came over here and the freedom, you could do whatever you wanted to do, the laws, everything. I didn't have to worry about everybody who wore a uniform, you know, that they were going to catch us and so on. So it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me when I landed in New York. I was just so happy, you know, so happy. I told you about listening to the BBC.
Yes, sir.
At that point, I was about, 14 years or whatever age old when we heard that. Then I'm in the United States and I get drafted into the U.S. Army. I'm sent to Germany. I'm working for the U.S. Army as an interpreter. And I was also became a specialist in classification assignment, which meant that our division, the 1st Infantry Division, is the one that I was stationed with, which was a great division, had me working as a, you know, classification assignment, which mean we got so many new troops every week or every month, while others would go home because they finished their length of service. So I would walk from my office to, you know, where we slept and so on, and where our company office was. So one day someone said, hey, the company commander of headquarters company, that's what I was in, the headquarters company, wants to see you. So I went to see the commander, and he said, Corporal Werfel, I've been watching you for a while, coming from your workplace back to the billets over here. And I've noticed that you have a very straight, proper walk. And I have an idea, and you can say yes or no. I would like for you to be in the color guard of the 1st Infantry Division. Now, this is 20,000 men, you know? So I said, yeah, that'd be an honor for me to be the color guard and carry the American flag, you know? So I became a color guard individual, and I loved it, you know?
Were you ever treated poorly while in the U.S. Army because you were German?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I became an American citizen while I was in the Army in Germany. public law under Eisenhower's time when he was president, where they passed a law where if you had lived in the United States for a couple of years and you've served in the military service, in the American military, that you were eligible to apply for a citizenship rather than wait a normal 5 years. So I became a citizen in Frankfurt, Germany. That's where I was sworn in.
What do you think of when you see the flag, even now at 92?
Oh, it's the flag of my life, the flag of my happiness, you know? I mean, there are some horrible things going on right now, and we'll get to that in a minute. But now I get drafted into the Army, of course, and I'm in the color guard and all of that. And one day, the company commander tells me that, Ruffel, you are going to the Normandy, to France. I said, I am? Why? Well, the entire color guard is, because it's a 10-year anniversary of D-Day. Oh. Which was the day that I listened to the ABC, remember? And believe it or not, I went to the Normandy and marched up and down in front of Eisenhower and Churchill and de Gaulle and all of those people, all came for the 10-year anniversary. All thousands, thousands of
people. How many people knew your story at that point?
No one. No one really knew. This was just a coincidence. You know, all of a sudden, you know, I'm in the color guard because I happened to walk straight. And it was such an honor for me. And now all of a sudden, I'm being sent to the 10-year anniversary. And I'm marching in front of all these thousands and thousands of people carrying the American flag. I can't tell you the pride. You know, one morning, I remember at 5 o'clock in the morning, they woke us up and they said, we want you on the beach. You got to, with the color guard. President Roosevelt had a son who was killed at Normandy. And he was buried right there on the beach. That's where his grave was. And we, the color guard, had to go there. And this is right on the beach, right on the English Channel. And we were there, the four of us, with the color guard. And we had someone who played tap. I'll never forget that moment that we stood there and the sun is rising over the channel. And it's such a beautiful morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. There's no one else but us, the color guard, and honoring, you know, the son of the president of the United States. It was just so fabulous. I mean, every time I think about it now, I still get goosebumps, you know.
An extraordinary, it had to have been an extraordinary moment for you because of just 10 years prior, you're huddled listening to the BBC in secret. You cannot rejoice. And here you are on parade in front of everybody. That's an extraordinary moment.
I think it's just amazing how it all worked out, you know. A matter of fact, I have a movie now of the whole 10-year anniversary that my secretary found on. And there was the entire 10-year anniversary. And I have that now, and I see myself walking with the, carrying the American flag. It was just great. It was just marvelous. Well, anyway, to go back to Germany, when finally the war was over, the Americans offered us to come to New York. Yeah, we went to New York, and it was wonderful, you know. And I had absolutely no papers, nothing. The army brought us over so quickly. We were in New York with no papers. But we were together with about 30 or 40 other children. We were all there without papers, and the government told us, we'll take care of you, but you got to wait here. Eventually, you can go anywhere you want in the United States, but at this moment, you got to stay here. And they gave us a nice place to live, all 30 children together in a large building, nice building in the Bronx. As soon as we get your papers, we'll let you know. And the papers finally came after 6 months.
This is Peter Rosenberger. We'll be right back with the conclusion of our conversation with Jack Werfel. If we don't remember the past, we're doomed to repeat it, and we see what's going on in our country. You're going to hear Jack's thoughts about that when we come back. I'll never forget walking into the hospital room after Gracie had her second amputation. Both legs are gone now. And she looked at me. She said, I know what I'm going to do. And I was kind of startled. I said, well, what are you going to do? She said, I'm going to help provide prosthetic limbs to my fellow amputees and tell them about Jesus. And I said, well, baby, can we get out of the hospital first? But she never let it go. And for almost 20 years, we've been working out of Ghana, West Africa. We treat patients all over there from other countries that come there. We send supplies. We send teams. We sponsor patients. We work with a prison where inmates volunteer to disassemble used prosthetic limbs so we can recycle the parts. All of this because Gracie trusted God with her heartache. We've got a huge shipment of supplies that is being loaded up right now to go out soon. Would you help us do it? StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. There's prosthetic feet, knees, pylons, sleeves, adapters, all kinds of connectors. All of these things we are sending over there so that people can walk. We're going to point them to Christ. Help us out. StandingWithHope.com/giving.
Shalom. This weekend is the celebration of the Jewish feast, considered to be the most important. I'm talking about the solemn celebration of Yom Kippur, or the Feast of Atonement. Jews everywhere reflect on their sins and seek forgiveness. It's a time to consider the seriousness of sin, and we encourage you to celebrate Yom Kippur in your own way, because God wants hearts of repentance. Indeed, we are prone to wander, but as Christians, we can rejoice that the blood of Christ has covered all our sins. Jesus saves wayward kings, pompous Pharisees, and even sinners like you and me. So don't delay. Come to God with a broken and contrite heart, and He will welcome you with open arms. This is Tim Moore with Lemon Lime Ministries wishing you Godspeed.
To hear more hope for the future from God's Word to those who've put their faith in Jesus Christ, and to understand God's prophetic warning to those who don't yet know Him, visit our website at ChristInProphecy.org.
All on my strength, my hope, on You I cast my care. In my distress, I know You hear my prayer.
Welcome back to the program. This is Peter Rosenberger. Thank you for being with us here on this special edition. I commemorated the October 7th anniversary of this horrific attack on Israel with my conversation with Jack Werfel, 92 years old, Holocaust survivor, astonishing story. And at the end of the last segment, he was recounting when he had just come to New York after escaping such horror. And by the way, if we don't remember the past, we're doomed to repeat it. And you see, again, what's happening on our soil in this country when it comes to the hatred of the Jews. This cannot be allowed to continue. Here's Jack Werfel.
Well, during those 6 months, I got to know New York pretty well. We traveled everywhere, you know.
What did you think of New York?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. What I couldn't get over were all the cars and the skyscrapers. I'd seen a few American cars before when I was in the army, but nothing. Millions and millions of cars, wonderful highways and all of that. You know, it was just amazing.
What about the food?
Oh, yeah. during the war, we hardly had any food. You know, the main food that we had were rabbits, and the rabbits that we would raise behind our house in little cages. We would always have 30, 40 rabbits, and every night we had to go out after we finished our work and find rabbit food and feed them, so that on Sunday, every Sunday, it was my job to kill a rabbit and skin it and prepare it for cooking. The whole family together would eat one little rabbit on Sundays. Once we came over here, I had everything. I was able to go to school. I was able to get a job. I was able to live wherever I wanted to live as long as I had the money and so on. It was just a wonderful, wonderful life, you know? Yeah, I think you can understand my disappointment today.
When I hear your story, I can only try to imagine how much sorrow you must have at looking at New York. and what it's become, and looking at our universities, and looking at our political system, and the disrespect of the flag and the institutions of this country. And then here we are at the one-year anniversary of October 7th.
Yes.
And I'd like to close out this time right now, just address those issues. I mean, look at the landscape of America, look at Israel, look at the culture of what's happening with the Jewish people now. As somebody who's been through this horror before, what are your thoughts?
I'm very disappointed, and I'd like to tell you one little story. All my life that I was in the United States, people always said to me, Jack, you had an amazing life coming over here, and you ought to write a book about your life. You write a book. And I always said, listen, there were millions of people the same thing happened to. I'm sure there's someone there who can write a book better than I can. So I never wrote the book. When I was 90 or 91 years old, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, my daughter, Dana, who's right here with me, said one day to me, Dad, you got to sit down and think about our wish. We want you to write a book so that our family and our children and our great-grandchildren and so on, that everybody knows what happened to our family, why did we come to America, how did we come to America, and so on. Well, if there's only one person in the world that I cannot say no to, and that's my daughter, Dana. So I said, okay, I'll try. It won't be good because I'm not a writer. I wrote this book called My Two Lives. I had one life in Germany during the Holocaust, and I had this wonderful life in the United States. And I was very successful in the United States, which I could have never done in Germany. So I wrote this book. And this book came out, was published, was printed the day this major problem started, where Hamas, you know, killed, what was it, 1,800 Jews or something like that, which was the worst thing that happened to the Jewish people ever since
the Holocaust.
Exactly, since the Third World War, you know. And then, as you mentioned before, the universities and the colleges and the teachers from the colleges were asked to come before Congress and explain what happened. What are we going to do about it? What's going on? They had no answer. I listened to them. They had no answer. They didn't say that that was terrible and that was this and that was that, you know. Peter, the same thing happened in Germany, happened in the Third Reich with Hitler. Look, Germany was very prosperous. The Jews were very prosperous. The Jews were in all the wonderful positions. They were teachers. They were writers. They were musicians. The Jewish had a wonderful life, and they worked very hard and really pushed to get their children educated. Education was number one with the Jewish people at that time. And look what happened to him. And now all of a sudden I see this business coming up here in the United States, my country, my new country, that I'm so proud of. And I see what's happened at the universities, at the colleges and so on, you know. So it really hurts. It hurts. And I'm really concerned and worried about it. And that's why this book that I wrote about my life.
We can't sit by and cluck our tongues and say, that's a shame. If we do not stand up against this evil, you've known this because of personal thing. This evil has to be confronted. Otherwise it will grow.
Absolutely. That's what I'm afraid of, you know, and with my little book, that book was really just for the family. It was for my family, for my kids, for my grandkids and so on. But somehow the book came out, and it's now being read everywhere, you know? And I'm happy if all these young people in this country who don't know anything really about that time and about the Holocaust, maybe it will educate them. If it just educates a few of them how the Third Reich started, and there is a similarity in what's happening here now. It's in a different way. It's different. But yet there's a great similarity.
Hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah.
In America, of all places, it's hard to imagine.
I know.
What are your final thoughts that you would like to say to the people of this country? As we're in a very difficult election season, the country is at loggerheads with itself. We've got wars brewing in Eastern Europe. We've got wars in the Middle East. We've got a mess on our hands at our southern border. We've got all kinds of things going on. What would you say to the American people, if you could say it to as many people as you could?
Well, ask God for peace, because that's the one thing that really every person wants, except it's you who cause all these problems and become the leaders of these problem times and organizations. You know, ask God to help us, pray for it, and do something about it yourself. You've got to do something yourself in order to get the help. And like I'm trying to do something with by writing this book, My Two Lives, and using it now in order to educate people in this country, at least a few of them. That's about the best that I can do at this point. But everybody should really think about it, and in particular the schools. I just don't understand why the schools don't teach this more. I mean, between the ages of 8 and 18, I read somewhere, there are only about 30% of those people who know that there was such a thing as a Holocaust or such a thing as a Hitler war, you know, during the Second World War.
Only it's 30%. Astonishing to believe that people don't even think it. Some people don't even think it happened.
I know.
Yeah,
that's what's incredible to even wrap your mind around. But you know, it's amazing what people will believe. Do something, pray for peace, and do something. And I think those are good words, Jack. And I want you to know how much I appreciate your time here today. I really do.
Well, Peter, I appreciate you having me with you here. It means a lot to me. It really
you
does.
Bet. I'm
very proud of being on your show here.
I'm going to sign off, and I want to thank you again, both of you.
Thank you, Peter.
For being
Thanks,
here with
Peter.
Me. This is Peter Rosenberger, PeterRosenberger.com. You've heard Jack Werfel in his own words. He's 92 years old. His daughter Dana was helping him there. An amazing story. I hope you'll check out his book. We must remember these things and pray for peace. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. It's what Scripture tells us to do. I'll end with Gracie singing what you've been hearing throughout this entire program, a song that I wrote called Covenant Lament. As you listen to this and think on this show, my whole point was to remind myself that sometimes as caregivers, we can get wrapped up in our own stories, and it's important to hear someone else's. I like what Jack said, pray for peace and do something. This is Peter Rosenberger, PeterRosenberger.com.
On you I cast my care. In my distress, I know you hear my prayer. On you alone I wait. I rest upon your word. I am redeemed and free because of you.